The following is an excerpt from the Science Podcast. To hear the whole show, visit www.sciencemag.org and click on Science Podcast.
Finally today, David Grimm, online news editor of Science, is here to give us a rundown of some of the recent stories from our daily news site. So first, we're talking about a curious vocal pattern that is creeping its way into mainstream speech.
Right, Carrie, this pattern is called vocal fry, and it's very popular now among female pop stars, but you hear it all the time, even on the radio. For some reason in the U.S., this is a vocal pattern more common among women than men, and if I can approximate it, it sounds a little bit something like this. You know, it's sort of like crackling of your voice that can happen at the end of sentences. It doesn't even necessarily have to be at the end of sentences. And I think I actually just did it again. very much conscious of vocal fry since I read this story. But anyway, the question in this study was, is this a budding trend in American English? Is this something that is becoming more common? And that's what the researchers sent out to find out.
And I think it's interesting to note that all the descriptions of this phenomenon are all really sensorially rich. You know, it's vocal fry. It's
yes.
creaky. It's
exactly,
fluttering and staccato.
Exactly.
But this is not something that's really, I think, new in speech. So why is this study coming out now?
It's a good question. Actually, scientists have known about vocal fry for a long time, and it used to be thought of as a speech disorder. In fact, it was even thought that it could harm the vocal cords. So it was sort of seen as a bad thing. But in this new study, the scientists didn't really think this was a disorder. They said, you know, we're hearing this so often that this must be becoming a normal part of speech. And they really wanted to figure out how frequent it was. And what they did was they took 34 female speakers, because like I said, you know, in the U.S. at least, it seems to be more common among women than men, this vocal fry. And they actually basically just had them talk to some speech therapists, and they had their voices recorded, and the observers tracked vocal fry. And what they found was that more than two-thirds of the research subjects that they looked at used vocal fry in their speech. So it was very common in this sort of randomly selected group of people. So what the researchers say is, first of all, that shows it's very prevalent. And also, they said that based on the speech patterns that they heard, this probably isn't harmful to the vocal cords because the speakers aren't creaking continuously or at the end of every sentence. It's not a constant thing. It's kind of like an affect or an accent that's sort of thrown in here or there, but they don't think it's happening frequently enough in speech to cause any problems.
All right. And next up, we have a thermal illusion.
Right. So from a sort of speech, quote unquote, disorder to something that's sort of more a trick of the mind than a trick of speech. This is something known as the thermal grill illusion. And you can actually try this for yourself at home if you want to. You can take some hot dogs out of the refrigerator and warm some of them up. Don't make them hot, but just sort of warm some of them up and keep the other ones cold. And then maybe put 5 hot dogs on the counter in a warm, cold pattern, and then put your hand on it. And what you'll find, surprisingly, is that even though these hot dogs aren't hot, your hand will actually burn, almost the same sensation that you might get if you touched very cold snow. And this illusion has been known to scientists for more than 100 years, but they don't know why it causes pain.
So in a sense, it's almost the overall effect is not the sum of its parts, that the cold and the heat, neither of them is painful on their own.
Neither of them is painful on their own, but somehow when you put them together and you put them together in this pattern, it causes pain. And so what the researchers tried to do is they tried to figure out what was going on here. And they took a bunch of volunteers and they put them in an fMRI scanner. And fMRI scanners measure different parts of the brain and they look for brain activity in different parts of the brain. And what the researchers found, they actually didn't use hot dogs here because that wouldn't really work inside an fMRI scanner. What they did was they took these little plastic boxes that had these silver bars on them, and they pumped warm or cold water through the bars in this alternating pattern. And then they had subjects basically touch this box while they were in the fMRI scanner. And as expected, when the researchers created this alternating warm and cold pattern, the subject said, hey, that's kind of painful. The illusion was working. And in their minds, what was happening was that their thalamus, which is this region of the brain which is really important for processing sensory impulses, really showed itself to be very active. And also part of the brain's pain matrix, which is this collection of regions that manage pain, also became active. So the subjects weren't just sort of saying that they felt pain. Their brains were actually telling them that, hey, you're feeling pain.
So this all seems related to the study of pain and neuroscience in general. How does this influence that whole realm of study?
So I guess the issue here is, you know, what the researchers are trying to figure out is, does this sort of illusory pain tell us anything about real pain? And curiously, there's a condition known as cold allodynia. And this often happens to people that get a stroke. Something that just feels cool to the rest of us feels very painful to people with this condition. And researchers have also been studying this condition to figure out what is it in the brain that actually causes us to feel pain. And what this team wants to do is see whether these people that experience cold allodynia are having activation in the same part of the brain that the people that are experiencing this thermal grill illusion. And if so, it could really shed a lot of light about how our brains process pain, and it could even lead to treatments for people that have these disorders to potentially lessen the amount of pain that they feel.
Okay, and finally, we have some interesting insight into the relationship between humans and snakes.
Right. This last study concerns a tribe of people known as the Agta Negritos that live in the Philippines, or at least they used to. They're pretty much dying out, unfortunately. And this tribe has been around for a long time and has had a lot of nasty encounters with snakes. There's a lot of very big snakes that live in this area. Some of these snakes are pythons that are 5 meters long, and they're just kilograms, kilograms of weight. And you can actually see a picture of one of these snakes on the site. And these snakes, as you would expect, are not very friendly neighbors. In fact, the Agta Negritos report in this study, they were interviewed for this research, that every 2 to 3 years, a member of the tribe was either seriously injured or actually killed by one of these snakes. And that's not surprising. You know, people get hurt by snakes all the time.
Well, we all know that snakes are a nuisance and can be dangerous to humans. So what led to us taking a closer look at how much they actually interact with us?
Right, right. It's pretty obvious that snakes hurt us. What this new study was asking is it more than just a one-way street? In other words, are we also hurting snakes? And if we're doing that, if we're hurting snakes and snakes are hurting us, are we actually influencing each other's evolutionary history, which would be really interesting. And what the researchers found was, you know, they interviewed a lot of members of this tribe, and they discovered, you know, as I said, that a lot of people in this tribe have been hurt by snakes in the past. But what they also discovered is that the members of the tribe actually also have been hunting these snakes for a long time. These snakes can be very big. They're obviously good sources of meat, and this is sort of a hunter-gatherer culture, so they're going out in the forest and they're actually hunting. And the third interesting thing about this relationship is that not only are the snakes hurting people and the people are hurting snakes, but they're also competing with each other for the same food. A lot of times when the hunters would kill these snakes, they would find that inside the snakes there were wild deer, believe it or not, wild pig, and monkeys. That just gives you a sense of how big these snakes are. And these were the same animals that the humans themselves were hunting. So there's a really complex relationship going on here between snakes and people.
So from this, what are scientists extrapolating as our sort of history going back with these snakes?
Well, they're saying that if what's true for the Agta Negritos is true for human beings going far back in history, and they think it might be because they looked at some other primates and they found a similar relationship with snakes, then it means that there's this sort of evolutionary arms race going on between people and snakes. So the idea would be, you know, if snakes are hurting people, people have to develop maybe very good eyesight to see the snakes, especially if the snakes are a thick brush or whatever. And so that maybe our vision got better because of snakes. And on the flip side, snakes are trying to avoid being killed by people. So maybe they developed better camouflage so we couldn't hunt them. This is all very speculative. But now that scientists know that this complex relationship exists, they can really look at the evolutionary history of both us and of snakes and figure out just how much influence we've had on each other.
Well, I'm glad we don't have pythons running loose in downtown D.C.
That's true.
All right. Well, what else have we had on the news site this week?
Well, Carrie, for Science Now, we've got stories on the physics of rainbows, or the physics of double rainbows, actually, and also about why hairy people are more likely to detect parasites on their skin. Kind of gross, but interesting science there. For Science Insider, our policy blog, we've got a story about funding for malaria research and what impact it's having on malaria deaths worldwide. Also, study about brain scans in the courtroom. is it kosher to scan the brains of defendants to see whether they are telling the truth, whether they are mentally insane, and a bunch of other things. And finally, this week on Science Live, our weekly chat on the hottest topics in science, we'll be covering the announcement by CERN this week of the possible discovery of the Higgs boson. We'll have a couple big scientists on there to talk about what it all means for the Higgs, for science, and for physics going forward. So be sure to check out all of these stories on the site.
I will definitely check those out. Thanks, Dave.
Thanks, Carrie.
David Grimm is the online news editor for Science. You can check out the latest news and the policy blog, Science Insider, at news.sciencemag.org, where you can also join a live chat, Science Live, on the hottest science topics every Thursday at 3 p.m. U.S. Eastern Time.